Okay, don't worry about the list. We'll come back to that. However, the list is my meager approximation of some of the things that could potentially define the relationship of God to the individual. And by individual, I mean you, me, and everyone. And apparently that's not limited to this planet. That's somewhere upwards of, or nearing, what is it, 7-10 trillion worlds in the universe? Something like that, give or take.
Seven.
Yes. And God is conscious of everybody who's plugged into the personality circuit. Now, I'm not sure, and that's independent of the adjusters. So, bearing that in mind is a place to launch this from, that as Barb said, we're already enrolled. The part that's not enrolled is our individual understanding to the degree that we, to the place we are on the path. It's not an either-or thing. It's where we are on whatever path that is, and none of us knows that whole path yet. We aspire for it, hopefully. Okay, my name is Bennett Rutenberg. I'm from Terre Haute, Indiana, about 200 miles south of here. Found the book in Northern California in 1971, and bought it later that fall. I borrowed $20 from my mother because I was going to get her the book to straighten her out. And after about a week, she handed it back to me and said, "You know, I think you're supposed to read this." And I said, "I think you're right." So, I did what a lot of people do. I read Adam and Eve, Lucifer. I read all those things that I thought I knew something about. I was moderately accomplished at the Bible and had gone that route that many of our friends have gone of getting into various religions and philosophies. And, well, the short of it is when I had found the Urantia book through a series of events, which is too long to tell at this point, I already had a pretty profound sense of faith and had a let's just call it a spiritual birth. One day I didn't believe in God so much. I always liked things that were spirited, but I didn't think believing in God was cool. And I remember being at a concert the summer before, and at the end of Joe Cocker's set, he said, "God bless everyone." What a weirdo. Why would he say that? Well, I was later to find that out and be thankful for it.
Were you raised in a particular faith?
I wouldn't call the faith that I was raised in a particular faith or tradition. Let me get where I got eye contact. My father was Jewish. My mom was, I suspect, some combination of Presbyterian and Greek Orthodox because of her parents who had met and they lived in Oklahoma. And we weren't exactly religious. However, we had some concerned aunts on the East Coast who all married non-Jewish people but wanted their twin, I have an identical twin brother, wanted their twin nephews to be bar mitzvahed. So we got thrust into that procedure, and it was, you know, it's all a good memory. Where I grew up, it was something that was happening a lot, so we were part of that as a result. But shortly after that, I can't say it was very much about God. And even though there are more religious Jews today than there used to be, I think 20, 30 years ago, it's still a little more of a cultural thing. But there's some kind of spiritual revival going on very quietly, even within them, because the hunger that's in us is in everybody. And for those of you that are, you know, somewhat involved, I guess, in this World Parliament of Religions, or at least following those events, you can see that that is something that's it's the spirit working out in real life, not in people's imaginations or hopes of what they think ought to be. So with that, let me not get off on some unnecessary tangent. I'm going to read about a page of this, and what I have for you is a collection of quotes, many of which are from Paper 5. But so that there is not an incorrect expectation, the intent here is to deal with the subject, as Barb mentioned in her opening, of God consciousness and God the Father. It will not be limited to Paper 5. I'm hoping it's not limited at all. And you will each be providing us with material, your opinions, your experiences, and we will be reading some of these quotes. I don't think we'll really have time to do all of them. This is supposed to run until, what, 12:15?
Yeah.
Okay, and I will sit here as long as the discussion is going. If we need to stay after, if we're done at 12, we'll leave at 12. Yes. Yes. Well, I'm being recorded. I don't know how much of what you guys say will actually be heard. But if somebody says something important, tell me to repeat it so it gets into the tape, and then it is going to be edited. Hello. And your name is Chris? Okay. Well, I'm doing good to have first names. Welcome to our little experience. You probably caught the tail end of what I was saying. This book is based on the idea of Paper 5, but in one narrow line of thinking, it became my opinion along the years that Paper 5 is such an important part in the stream of understanding what the revelators want us to understand in the way and order that they want us to understand. But my estimate is that we're way beyond the necessity of some of those things. And the idea of discussing God's relation to the individual is, again, to really talk about the best, the highest that we know. And I think we got a great kickoff there with Mr. Oliveira's plenary, wherein we have a word to add to your lists there. You can put it wherever you'd like to put it, and that would be intimate. Intimate. And I will come back to one of those other things in due course. In December 1969, I was minding my own business, thinking it was uncool to believe in God. My life was going nowhere, and I was about to find that out. In a quiet moment of reflection, there was a presence, a small voice. I knew to be God. I felt an unbelievable sense of gratitude. I wanted to help and immediately volunteered to do so. Without precedent, I began calling this voice Father. What can I do? Follow me. I had more questions. Where are we going? Will it take very long? I really said that. And the voice said again, follow me. Not quite 2 years later, I met a man who had just found the book. I recognized it at once, and 2 months later began to read ever more seriously. And I might add that I tried to share the book with a few people in the early days, and it was probably a similar disaster as many of you have had, or and if you haven't had that disaster, then I certainly want to hear your story at some point. But I read alone for 23, 24 years before I ever came to a conference or met with a group of readers. And I've been actively involved there for about 15 years now. Eternity is now. In creating a greater capacity to know God and become more like Him, we might begin and continue to see, to comprehend. And comprehension is what? The mortal passport to paradise? More and more from His point of view. From math, we can learn something of the master mathematician. A point is one-dimensional. Connecting two points defines a line. A line is a concept which can also define the relationship between time and eternity. A line segment apparently has a beginning and ending. Such is an illusion of partial vision. The line extends infinitely in either direction. So also time extends into the eternal past and future. Looking at the whole line at once, we see all time. But the eternal universe is not a line. It is shaped as an ellipse which swings ever in orbit about our Father. We know from physics that as we speed up, time slows down. Therefore, bodies on the outer edge of space have slow time, whereas in the center we have all time. This includes moving to the center of our souls. I hope you'll think about that one. Time is time because it passes. Eternity is now because it is always now. As we become more like God, God makes us more real. As we become more real, we become more like God. This is something that I wrote a long time ago, in part stimulated by a very good friend of mine who contracted AIDS in the early 90s, and this was read at his funeral, not in the exact form that you find it, but close enough. Time doesn't translate into eternity. The finite doesn't translate into infinity. The partial doesn't just become absolute. Passing unpassable barriers is eventuality. Time is what we sense passing. We sense it more when we do less. Time is what we sense passing. We sense it less when we do more. It goes by faster in ecstasy. It goes so slow when we're in pain. It doesn't matter when we're having a fantasy. It matters so much under the strain. Move it through the seconds, the minutes go right by. Concentration through the hours makes the days fly by. Living full in the seasons of life, when this life ends, it begins again. On the next level, my friend, is where you'll remember who you're meant to be. Give up your pain and sorrow. Give up that fear of what you'll never know. Take care of the minutes, and God will take care of the years. When you wake up on the shores of that distant tomorrow, it will be better than you ever dreamed. When you wake up on the shores of the hereafter, it is already better than you ever dreamed.
I like that, take care of the minutes, God will take care of the years. When people are always saying, oh, time is really passing, you know, by years, by that would be the thing.
Yeah. I don't think of it often, and I'm probably not very good at it myself, but I remember the, I think it was Bobby Seale who was, I don't know that he originated it, but he was so fond of saying, seize the time. And while that had very, you know, material ramifications in that usage, the spiritual reality of it is there. And we don't want to choke it, because there is also that adage that he who holds loses. You know, hold on loosely if you want your love to last. There's all these things throughout the culture that this same concept kind of finds its way in. And when you look at it, I can't help the feeling myself that it's true. You know, I don't know the experiences you all have had, but I hope they're similar. Okay, what we've got is about 6 pages or so of quotes that go across this topic. And we're going to go around the room and read one and discuss. Let's not get too long-winded, because what we'd like to do is get through, again, not each and every one of these quotes, but every one that seems appropriate. And I think we're going to find that there's some things that complement. And let's see if we can't use that to find out, as I said in the beginning, that list that I gave you is only a partial list. If you sense something as we're going through this that is of the essence of our relationship with God, God's relation to each of us as individuals, let's call it out, let's get it on the list. Everybody okay with that? Mr. Hales, why don't you start us off? I know all your names now, but that's still not going to let you off the hook.
My name's John. I guess that was paper 22?
No.
Yeah, 2205. The Universal Father never... It's the first quote in the handout.
Okay. But it's not paper 22.
Forgive me, page 22. Excuse me.
I just want to make sure.
Okay, yeah, my notations are all page and paragraph number.
It's paper 1, section 1, paragraph 2.
The Universal Father never imposes any form of arbitrary recognition, formal worship, or slavish service upon the intelligent will creatures of the universes. The evolutionary inhabitants of the world of time and space must, of themselves, in their own hearts, recognize, love, and voluntarily worship. The Creator refuses to coerce or compel the submission of the spiritual free wills of his material creatures. The affectionate dedication of the human will to do the will of the Father's will is man's choicest gift to God. In fact, such a consecration of creature will constitutes man's only possible gift of true value to the Paradise Father. In God, man lives, moves, and has a being. There is nothing which man can give to God except this choosing to abide by the Father's will. And such decisions, affected by the intelligent will creatures of the universes, constitute the reality of that true worship which is also is so satisfying to the love-dominated nature of the Creator Father.
What jumps out at you there? If we try to take the meaning from this whole thought, what jumps out at you?
Choice.
Okay, you have a choice.
For me, it says there's nothing you can give to the Father but to do this. Mm-hmm. There's nothing. There's no gift.
And I think that
right.
Endless repetition of prayers.
The importance of trying to know and do God's will, just how important that is to our relationship with God, to our spiritual life.
Oh, okay, you guys, everyone here has read the book multiple times, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. What does it... For years I thought of the saying, do God's will. But in the back of my head was always, well, what is God's will? And I'd probably read it 100 times or more, even at that early date. But I still didn't focus on the what is the will. And the will is to be like God, to become like God, or to, in many respects, to behave as God behaves towards. Now, God has no equal, but he has coordinates in that sense. But, you know, to behave as God to our children, to behave as God would to our friends. Or Jesus comes along all this time later and says, on this world, but for everyone, don't just love people, don't just love your neighbor, love them as I love them. Do it the way I do it, do it the way the Father does it. And then that becomes the will. And here's the thing, when you hear, do the Father's will, and when we look at the usual and typical behaviors that are associated with that in mainstream Christianity, that is oftentimes some material, linear, I've got to go baptize people, or I've got to go purify people, or I've got to keep people from doing this behavior or that. And God's will is that, no, we shouldn't hurt ourselves. We shouldn't harm any living thing. But it's not a go and do this recipe. It's a be this. Be, behave. Look for how you can be of service, not how you can insert yourself in other people. And what did our first speaker say so wonderfully this morning? God didn't tell anybody his name. He reveals himself through his nature. And as we do that, if we want to be like God, then that's what we have to do, is reveal our highest nature. And that is in a giving and a loving. And the love is expressed through many things. The love is expressed through sometimes giving somebody exactly what they need and ask for, and sometimes it's through not giving them what they need and ask for, because the one, it's what would God's will be? If this were you and you were asking God for this, would he hand it to you? Or would he try to create a circumstance under which you would learn it for real? And this then becomes the crux of almost every other aspect of the religious, personal, religious, spiritual life. Because it's all based on behaving in this way, with these attributes that we'll continue to discuss here for our time. Yes?
I think I agree with you completely. And just with respect to the topic of the theme of God consciousness, it's also the most important aspect to God consciousness. This idea of that we're to try to know and to do God's will. It's not just being conscious of God, but it's being conscious of God in that way. And a good example is Adam and Eve, maybe especially Eve. We know she was conscious of God there in the garden, and she's trying to decide what to do. So it wasn't enough just to be conscious of God, to be God conscious.
Yeah.
What was really important was to try to do God's will with this consciousness of God.
Well, and look at us. Here we are. Some of us are 40, 50, 60 years old, okay, just in this room. And we have the amount of experience that we have and the vulnerabilities that we have at this point in our lives as to what we do well, not so well, what we do that's with God and what we do that's not so productive. But Eve had been alive for, I don't know the number, but a couple hundred thousand years, let's just say for the sake of discussion. How much would you know if you'd been around for a couple hundred thousand years?
Probably would have forgotten most of it. If the sequel to The Way I Live My Mortal.
Well, but I'm saying if you had the if you had her physical nature as well.
Yes.
You weren't deteriorating. I can't imagine a 50,000 year deterioration. 100 years is enough to comprehend. What is that in the teachings of Don Juan when they talk about the last trial of humanity is to face death, to face aging, the battle of time and what happens. And as our society has developed better techniques of living, more healthful living, better medicine, and as slow as it's moving, the fact is that people are now living long enough to have a whole new disease set that is based on some things in their body not living as long as others. Yes? Is that one way to say it? So, what do we do? Well, we're not going to go there. But something that Mr. Olivera stimulated for me was in his references and illustration of the Father's love. And we all know that's true. We learn early on, we learn from the Bible that the Father is living love. If we've been paying attention for a while, we've known this for much of our lives. And this is the thought that it stimulated. Love is the currency of the relationship we enjoy with God. Love is the currency. It's what goes back and forth, but mostly it comes from God to us, through us, and to wherever it is that we're supposed to be working, whoever we're supposed to be working with, whoever we're sharing our lives with. And several of us, just since the beginning of this conference last night, got into a couple of discussions about how, you know, we're a gradually growing community, just for the people of this planet. But as we go through all the stages of progressive existence, we're going to be collecting more friends, more family, and by the time we work our way all the way to paradise, we're going to have a pretty big crew, and we're going to become infinitely better at developing those relationships with friends, with people who are like us, people who are unlike us. as a result of all the experiences in the university of the universe. So we're not going to be out there with a bunch of strangers. And, you know, I've been at this a long time, and I'm just starting to get a handle on how real that is. And so getting back to the theme of God consciousness, consciousness is defined many ways, and I'm not going to presume to make that definition for you, but I'm going to suggest that it involves being conscious and acting and living within the frame of that conscious awareness. Because you can know God's there and you can feel the presence, and when somebody espouses truth and you go, oh yeah, 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 that. But it's the, well, wait a minute, this is really happening. Not just I'm participating or I believe this outside myself, as so many religionists do. But this, we're already enrolled. All of the framework, all of the structure on all levels is already there. We're going to get to use this body for this lifetime, and we're going to drop the body, and we're going to move on in the next vehicle, in the next vehicle, all there to house us with a reflection of the level of development that we are as a person by the strength, power, and persistency of our decisions, just as was said. Any other thoughts on that paragraph? The only gift you can give, the choicest gift and the only gift. But the gift, and forgive me if I say this 100 times today, but the gift is the relationship. What is it down on the list near the bottom? Michael, would you find the one that says God's relation is the relationship? Is that what I put there? All right. Just plant that in your minds for a little while. We're not going to go off on it yet. But God's relation to the individual is the relationship, the personal relationship. Any other comments on that one? All right, Larry, please.
Notwithstanding all that physically and spiritually separates you from the paradise of personal presence of God, stop and ponder the solemn fact that God lives within you. He has, in his way, already bridged the gulf. He has sent himself, his spirit, to live in you and to toil with you as you
to your eternal universe career.
What jumps out at you? What comes up for me was that I had an interesting experience listening to Charles this morning. Part of me really recoils at this style and gets into that how far damnation is reaching thing, because I grew up in shut it down in a way in order to kind of even survive. I had no choice, you know, I was sure that was my family, so they were worried about. So in some ways I kind of like wasn't even listening to what he said as so much, and you know, I would say in my mind it was very soft and loving. The same words were coming, really soft and loving, so we shouted at the hilltops.
Yes.
But something came up for me, and I realized that my experience of where God is had changed from something way out there. Even now, we think of him on paradise in the center of all things, so far away, and so out there. And I realized that I really experience God's presence inside my mind. And I don't think I'm out there anymore.
And look at the
kind of a mini revelation to me that, you know, that I've just kind of assumed that. I haven't tried to make it happen through any technique or anything.
Yeah.
I just kind of assumed that God, you know, ever since I found the fact that, well, God's along
but angels are along. Remember, he's here no matter what I'm doing. You know, I might forget about that he's there, but they're always there.
Yes.
And so I can't be too concerned about what I have done and not done. It's too late for that.
They were just educational episodes.
Okay, now God, we're going to be good, but, you know, go away for a while. I'm going to go off and do this other stuff, this meaningless stuff or something like that. But I mean, that subtle little thing of just almost things right there inside, in a very calm, you know, subtle way. Almost like a light. Almost like a little light living inside me. I was just closing my eyes and sort of not physically seeing it.
Well, and I in terms of this consciousness thing we just talked about, what you're saying, I mean, that's just it's a wonderful experience, and I have a question for you about it. But I would challenge the terminology, because I heard what your mind said through the words that you said.
Yeah.
It was the light.
Right.
It wasn't like the light. No. It was the light, and that's the difference between that intellectual or linear successive thinking versus that knowing that the book says something about. Well, you may not be able to quite figure out this, but the however the quote is, the spirit within man that you know, and you know now. Mm-hmm. Now, you realize that today, but how long, how many years have you known these intellectual truths that carried you forth in your own personal evolution to that point?
Well, I don't know if this is the first time I've experienced it, but I've been reading the book for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I had some concepts of God before. I kind of like, they didn't work. A lot of them didn't work for me. A lot of them weren't so, you know, we're not true, we're not real.
Yeah.
So it's like, there are people who grow up with no concept of God, or a very negative, God does not exist. I don't know if that was ever there for me. Most I got was probably some kind of agnosticism.
Sure.
You know, and in fact, when I started to read the book and I saw it was bringing me back to Jesus, I thought, oh, you know, I had enough of Jesus.
Thank you. That's what we hope for. You know, that's the point of this conference, I think. But it's the point of life.
Yeah.
It's the point of life, and why, when we have that, somebody I work with once said, and it's impossible to do, but it's not impossible to believe in and exercise the idea behind. It's like the being perfect part. Well, I'm not perfect. You ever had a run-of-the-mill Christian person say, well, you got to be perfect. Right now, today, this second?
Yeah.
I'm already late. Can't even see the bus anymore because it's so far down there. But do I have any time here? Can you give me 15 minutes?
Can I put my shoes on?
Can I put my shoes on? Could I just do a few more earthly things that I was meaning to? Well, whatever. But yes, the point. It's just amazing that when you bring into this reality, and here's the point, spend 100% of your time on the most important things. So I wish you all good luck in your future accomplishment, that is, as you bound out of here like first graders, skipping and jumping rope to the tune of that song, and 100% of your time on what's important.
And
I'm wondering if I'm functioning past 10 or 20%.
Well, there's different ways to look at that. So you could say that whatever you're doing, you invest all your attention and focus on consciousness, then it is the most important thing.
And that comes back to the one of the definitions of faith and religion is that it mobilizes all the powers of conviction and you're totally into it. Yeah.
And in that way, nothing, well, there may be things that aren't important, but so many things that might seem seemingly small or trivial
They do. When
can in fact be important if you are putting your attention and your motivation is right.
You realize that something that may have previously seemed insignificant or run-of-the-mill becomes tremendously important and relevant in the context of the Spirit in your relationship with God.
Yeah. And in your relations to others, because it's other things that, of course, they're likely not things that you would necessarily care that much about, but it may be important to someone else. And the fact that you're participating in it with them.
It says
to them nothing about the thing itself, but your relation.
Yes.
To them.
And if you're being like God, the relationship is within the material framework, that service that you render to others, it isn't about you, it's about them. And I think you just defined that pretty well. It's what's important to them. And how many people do you see in this movement that they're always looking for the recipe? They always want to know how I can give you what I have. How can I give you my spiritual experience now so you have it and appreciate it the way I do? And they're always disappointed to hear that you can't do that. Has anyone here not failed in attempting to do that? Has anyone here enjoyed complete and utter success in that endeavor? Anybody?
No, I mean, can't do it. I mean, I just related to all of you this little experience that I had, but I can't believe you had that experience.
No.
You know, I mean, yours will be unique.
I mean, it's very generous that we have this bounty of stuff and that we're willing to just toss it off to someone else, but I'm thinking it needs to go through us. We need to fully appreciate it, and what's contained in that will then give us a better, a higher ability to deliver what is most needed as we go through this thing that we call social service. Not social work. Okay. We good on that one?
Yeah.
All right. Ken, please.
Please refresh my memory. Which one?
6301.
Although the approach to the paradise presence of the Father must await your attainment of the highest finite levels of spirit progression, you should rejoice in the recognition of the ever-present possibility of immediate communion with the bestowal spirit of the Father, so intimately associated with your inner soul and your spiritualizing self.
While you're looking that up, rejoice in the immediate possibility of communion. Or as is on the list, his presence is immediately available.
That was my experience.
Yeah. And granted, we aren't there all the time, but when you devote yourself to that, I think you come back much more easy. It's like any good habit. You know, once you make yourself learn it, then you practice it.
It's not, you know, I find it that if I just sort of stop my thoughts and get quiet and just close my eyes, it's just instantly there. It's not like I have to search for it. You know, it's just because I'm just not constantly aware of it. It is always there.
And we may not be consciously aware of it at all times, but we can actually become, by a process of decision making, consciously aware that it has always been here. Since the moment of our engagement in that intimacy with God, it has always been here in its entirety, even though it be all potential at that point. And that awareness is part of, I think, what helps, because that awareness is from the inside, and therefore it throws off some of those barriers and walls that keeps us from connecting that then in our life. And okay, Ken, you were going for a reference or?
No, I was just looking it up on the page.
Okay. Quote. Oh, okay. All right. Did you have a comment on that? And nobody here disagrees. No. Okay, good. Donna.
If mortal man is wholeheartedly spiritually motivated and reservedly consecrated to the doing of the Father's will, then since he is so certainly and so effectively spiritually endowed by the indwelling and divine gesture, there cannot fail to materialize in that individual's experience the sublime consciousness of knowing God and the supernal assurance of surviving for the purpose of finding God by the progressive experience of becoming more and more like Him. If such a human soul desires to know God and become like Him, honestly wants to do the Father's will, there exists no negative influence of mortal deprivation, no positive power of possible interference that can prevent such a divinely motivated soul from securely ascending to the portals of prayer. Well, my thought on this is that knowing that when we ascend to the portals of paradise and we are at the right hand of the Father, then that would mean that when we see the Father face to face in our finality of completion of divinity, that that we would come perfect as His word. And that is what He wanted to give to us. He could not contain Himself. That is why there is creation. Because God Himself could not contain all that He is and all that He has. Therefore, He shares that with an infinite creation. Because it's so wonderful.
Okay, and if we want to be like God, and we've received, you know, the first several doses of this gift, of this enrichment, this drive to go out and find Him, does God just hand it to us? Does He say, here, okay, or it's like the book says, you know, well, you survived the material life, and now you're just mustered into this eternal bliss, floating around in heaven with God and the angels. Or, oh, there's
university.
More. There's more work to do. Higher school, higher experience. It's going to get tougher. It's going to get more rewarding. But in the end, you recognize God for having been with in that medium, in that exchange, that love that translates into all those things that Charles spoke of this morning in descending order. Love is what causes the need for all of those things. And was wisdom before mercy? Is that right?
Yes.
Wisdom was because you got to be wise enough to offer mercy. If you weren't wise enough, you'd just deliver justice. If you were an evolutionary god in some volcano in some desert somewhere, that's how you might behave. But in the real world, there cannot fail to materialize. Well, for you it might be different. I don't think I can do that. I'm not good and I'm not worthy. God thinks you are. You know, argue with Him for a while. That would be the sure, even though there's a defiance in that, that would be the surefirest way to get straightened out. Yes.
I would comment on that, though, that they have two adverbs that lead into that that are very important. It's not just if man is motivated. If man is wholehearted, spiritually motivated. And it's not just that you're consecrated. It's your unreservedness. They don't use these qualifying phrases
lightly, no.
Then there cannot fail to materialize the sublime consciousness of knowing God. So it's not going to, the system that God has set up is not going to fail. But we have to strive more and more towards wholehearted, not just half-hearted, not just above half-hearted, but towards the more perfect goal, mm-hmm. wholeheartedly, and with no reservation, no conditions set on unreserved concentration. Those are challenges. Those qualifying words are challenges to us
mm-hmm.
to strive to accomplish.
Yes.
But the system won't fail.
Because your technique and your purpose can't fail if you do thusly.
You still have the choice.
Here's one. In the records of the universe regarding your life, there will never and cannot be the possibility that you have been advanced beyond your willingness, beyond your choice, beyond your sincerity, beyond the actual level of attainment, the living current level of attainment. Because in each of life's circumstances, the record will show that you agreed with the plan of God, or you will have made a choice that is not part of that plan, and you will have gone through that particular learning experience, which will lead you back to where you get to make that. It's like this, the bridge is there, and sometimes we just go across the bridge, happy and gay. Sometimes we walk back and forth in front of that bridge for a couple of years. Sometimes we dig a trench and we don't even know the bridge is there. Sometimes we blow the bridge before we go across it. In which case, there still is a way, but I mean, when a person's that resolutely, I don't know, some negatively descriptive term insert here. If a person's like that, then well, their life process is going to be delayed and they may ultimately say no. Can't imagine that someone who would be informed would ever say no to the eternal adventure. But
say they get tired.
Well,
you're going to live forever, but my life sucks.
It's apparent that it happened. That
yeah.
People choose
yeah.
not to survive.
But you know,
yes.
In the early, I had an insight once too about an urban mankind, you know, where maybe their entire life, you know, they're really primitive men. They have not been touched by any level of revelation whatsoever. They're just surviving. And you know, why would they want to continue to live like that eternally if they have no concept of any other kind of life other than that? So it's easy, kind of easy for them to say, just get out of here. You know, just you hear me from
well,
this. And that's and it's just because of basically their involvement.
The eternal struggle. You know, the endless new classes, you know, the endless new hurdles to jump through. Unless you get to a certain point, I guess, you know, you can. I guess you have to be able to envision the fact that somebody could choose not to survive. What would be that? How would
you get there? That's how I could see it. You know, it's like this train man.
Yeah. Thanks.
So, it to want to have an afterlife, you tend to kind of think of somehow the afterlife is kind of better. It's like really yeah. a better place, even though it's a challenge. I mean, as a book, it's going to be about challenges. It's going to be, you know, a life of pure ease is not as going to get boring too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you need one out of that. So,
there was a great Twilight Zone episode once upon a time about somebody that just had everything they wanted, and they were like going nuts after, I don't know, a few days or a week or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to skip ahead a few paragraphs onto the next page, and I'm going to read this because I'm really just going for in the interest of time and to cover as many of these as we can in this progression. I'm going to skip the first part because we it's already been said in this conversation and alluded to in the first plenary. But On 65, page 65, paragraph 1, in the middle of the paragraph, it says, and I just read this again for the first time here the other night, as the soul of joint mind and adjuster creation becomes increasingly existent, there also evolves a new phase of soul consciousness which is capable of experiencing the presence and of recognizing the spirit leadings and other supermaterial activities of the mystery monitors. A new phase of soul consciousness. So I guess a second light comes on somewhere along in there. Probably not much to discuss there unless someone has an insight they'd like to offer.
Well, question actually. I haven't seen this for some time. But do you think that is saying that the soul makes contact with the mind, or is it only within sort of a soul experience?
Well, and I'm going to suggest my understanding of this, and anybody who wants to throw in, certainly welcome. But if the soul is the product of the joint decision making of the adjuster and the personality, then it's like every time you make, and to the degree of spiritual value contained in each decision you make, you're not filling up in a volume kind of way what the soul is, but it's a new and unique wholeness that is added to your personality and ultimately into what your life will become after the material life is over.
It says increasingly consistent.
Yes.
And I there's another famous quote somewhere in the book where it says about you can actually change the seat of your personality, or the seat of your personality.
Identity.
From your identity, mm-hmm. from your idea that I'm my mind and my body and, that to,
yes.
to your soul. And your soul becomes your identity.
Yes.
You can do that here in this life, but few people are able to do it. But you can actually do that here. You don't have to wait until your soul goes on to the magic worlds.
So it's almost like another sense. Your soul
It is kind of another set of senses, an additional set of senses, but it's an internal kind of.
It's internal, but it becomes superimposed.
It's like super thinking, post or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to put it in.
Well, it's somewhere in the book it says that from the standpoint of whoever is delivering this insight, they say that there are basically seven dimensions upon which the evolving human soul functions, or something to that effect. And I can't tell you what all of those dimensions are, but it obviously goes way beyond. And beyond the time concept or timelessness, it has to get primarily into qualitative things, because all these things that physicists have dreamed up about the 11, it takes 11 dimensions to explain the string theory and all that stuff. Well, whatever. Okay, and we're gonna one of the quotes that you mentioned, at least one of them is in here about that, and we'll get to it when it turns up. Let's move ahead to 6905. Chris, if you would take that, please.
Eternal survival of personality is wholly dependent on the choosing of the mortal mind, whose decisions determine the survival potential of the immortal soul. When the mind believes God and the soul knows God, and when, with the fostering adjuster, they all desire God, then is survival assured. Looks like teamwork.
Yeah, it's this eternal partnership. There is God the Father, and then there is this, and I wish we had a better term than fragment, because fragment denotes partiality, at least in our language, the way it is today. But the fragment is yet something that is way out and beyond and more than just ordinary wholeness. It's not just a physical wholeness or a conceptual wholeness, but it is divine and spiritual wholeness originating from the Father.
This kind of tells me that, I guess I read in this that unless a person really becomes God conscious, that's, I guess, the biggest possibility of choosing not to survive. Because if you got to that, you weren't conscious.
You just didn't believe it. You just didn't believe that was real. And that
you wouldn't have the surety or the.
And the reflective nature of that is, if you don't believe that that's real, what you're really saying is, I'm not real. And ultimately, if the agencies of the universe can't bring you to a realization of that, then God honors your decision and you become unreal. Ken?
The reference that I find very helpful for that concept is on 1233.
Okay.
The fifth paragraph on page 1233, for whoever has a book with them. This 1233, fifth paragraph. This does not mean that human beings are to enjoy a second opportunity in the face of the rejection of a first.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all. But it does signify that all creatures are to experience one true opportunity to make one undoubted, self-conscious, and final choice. So, the soul of man must and will be given full and ample opportunity to reveal its true intent and real purpose. So, I read in those phrases, undoubted, self-conscious, and final choice, one true opportunity, that if there's any slight possibility that we don't understand the full scope of the picture, that even our trying to reject it at this point in time will not be evaluated by our unseen friends as one fully conscious, undoubted final choice,
mm-hmm.
because we don't know the whole scope.
Mm-hmm.
And until we know the whole scope of what our choice, the ramifications of our choice, we can't actually make that choice.
An informed decision. Yeah, we talk about God being fair and loving and just and merciful and wise and all of those superlatives, and you could almost presume that that would demand that this would be the case, but yet until this revelation came out, very few people came to a realization that that was in fact the case. And it's still obviously submerged in these teachings because there is this sense among some people that they're not going to make it. And the fact is, the book also says, the ancients of days would rather pass an unworthy soul, and the implication is capable of great destruction, through rather than deprive one individual of the chance of finding that potential of true expression of what God created them to be. And that's a pretty strong assurance. It's like, the only way you can screw up is to say no with the same amount of conviction that it takes to say yes. And if you study and peruse this and you pray and you worship and you meditate and you serve, you find value in life because what you're doing is valuable. If the course of your life takes you through a way that either you're harmed from the outside to the point where you lose the desire to live, even that person, how many people have you met in your life that believed fervently in some religious person who was, what's the term, charismatic or something, and then turns out, well, he's having an affair with 10 women or something, you know, and then their faith gets crushed. Why is that? Because their faith was in that individual, because that individual fulfilled some mostly materialistic longing that they believed to be spiritual. But in fact, it's not what you believe in that is the vehicle of what we call salvation in some usages. It's who you believe in. When you believe in God, you will go through the educational things, no matter how stubborn you are. Face it, these guys are more experienced and smarter than we are, and they take us through the process in spite of ourselves.
But it's like here it says the choosing of the mortal mind. So to me, it's not necessarily just the believing, it's how our actions actually then are directed.
Well, you can believe whatever you want to believe, but until you make decisions consistent with that, and that decision then teaches you how valid the decision was, are you going to say, I'll never do that again? Or are you going to say, that was pretty good, but it could be better? Or, hey, that really worked well.
And it comes back to what we said earlier about the most important aspect to this God consciousness is not just being conscious God, but trying to know and do God's will, making choices that are consistent with God's will.
In actuality, in the living process, not as a thought, not as a thought or an agreement, just in a static state, but taking the potential and making it kinetic. Is that a way to say that?
Well, it's just making these decisions. Decisions and choosing are so important, and that they are. We try to do them in a way that they express God's will, or we're doing God's will. They're consistent with God's will.
You know, it's a lot like when they say the attitude of a little child. One image that sometimes comes to mind is when the kid's just learning to walk. You ever watch a child just learning to walk? They walk 3 steps and they fall down. They get up and they walk, and most of the time they got a smile on their face. Some of them are a little more serious, but they walk and they fall down and they get up. They walk and they fall down and they hit their head on the coffee table and they cry like it's the only thing in the world, and they get up and they walk some more, and then pretty soon they're running, and whatever woes you thought you had as a parent chasing a crawling child have now been completely and utterly complicated, because it only takes 5 seconds to get in trouble. Yes, I survived parenthood. Okay. Great comments. Okay, 7103, please. Michael. You don't have to read my little reminder there.
Oh.
Pay attention to this one.
I didn't think that was in the book.
But that's nice.
Having thus provided for the growth of the immortal soul, and having liberated man's inner self from the fetters of absolute dependence on antecedent causation, the Father stands aside. Now, having thus liberated from the fetters of causation, response at least pertains to the eternal destiny and provisions having made for the growth of the immortal soul. It remains for man himself, to the will of the creation, or to inhibit the creation of the surviving eternal self, which is his for the choosing. No other being, force, creator, or agency in all the wide universe of universe can interfere with any degree with the absolute sovereignty of the mortal free will as it operates within the realms of choice regarding the eternal destiny of the personality of the choosing mortal. As pertains to the eternal soul, God has decreed the sovereignty of the material and mortal will that is decreed absolute.
So there is one thing we do that's absolute. We get to decide. I don't have it handy, and I don't know if anybody knows this off the top of their head, but I looked up, for another presentation once, I looked up the word decide, which is one of those Latin words, and it actually means something like to cut out. You know, we use the term cull, which is so impotent compared to cut out, or, you know, to separate what is necessary, what is desirable from what is useless, and, well, it's already gone. To me, this is one of the most empowering things in the whole book. It just lays it all out there, and we could probably spend a week or so really breaking down these couple sentences. So I'll trust that you'll all meditate on it at some ongoing time in your life. But are there any immediate comments there, Michael?
No, I'm still digesting.
I read that one recently, so I kind of, you know, had it already reinvigorated. But, yeah.
It is so important.
I'm going to read this one just quickly without comment. The next page, 71, paragraph 4. The personality circuit of the universe of universes is centered in the person of the Universal Father, and the Paradise Father is personally conscious of and in personal touch with all personalities of all levels of self-conscious existence. And this personality consciousness of all creation exists independently of the mission of the thought adjusters. Kind of alluded to that in my introduction, but I wanted to say it the way the book says it. Jack, would you take 7107, please?
God provides for the choice of all true personalities. No personal creature can be coerced into the eternal adventure. The portal of eternity opens only in response to the free will choice of the free will sons of the God of free will.
Yes?
Perchance your handout has a dropped word in there.
It may, and let me apologize ahead of time, because though I attempted to correct what the computer did to these copies, which were taken directly out of other quotes or directly out of the Urantia Foundation website, all my efforts to get it right didn't, but please fix us.
Perchance it's the word sovereign. God provides for the sovereign choice of all true personalities.
Sovereign, thank you.
You're welcome. And that reflects back to the one at the bottom of the previous page where that word is used again. No other being, force, creator, or agency in the wide universe of universes can interfere in any degree with the absolute sovereignty of the mortal free will. God provides for the sovereign choice.
Yes. And then they say also in that end of the paragraph there, three times the word free will is used. Let's make certain that you get what we mean. It's a free will choice. You are free will sons. And God is the God of free will. God is a free will God. And that goes back to that wholehearted business. It probably can't really be called free will if it isn't wholehearted in a very subjective sense. That's arguable, but I hope you get what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. These are really important concepts.
Mm-hmm. Thanks again, Ken. Who's up? Emily please, the next one, 138.04.
The Father absolutely individualizes each personality as a unique child of the Universal Father, a child without duplicate in infinity, a will creature irreplaceable in all eternity. The Father's love glorifies each child of God, illuminating each member of the celestial family, sharply silhouetting the unique nature of each personal being against the impersonal levels that lie outside the fraternal circuit of the Father of all. The love of God strictly portrays the transcendent value of each will creature, unmistakably reveals the high value which the Universal Father has placed upon each and every one of his children, from the highest creator personality of paradise status to the lowest personality of will dignity among the savage tribes of men in the dawn of the human species on some evolutionary world of time and space.
They take this from a standpoint of a mortal who's attained paradise, already all the way down to the most useless, savage human being, and God places that value, and it brings to mind Jesus' statement of, you've done it to the least of these, you've done it to me. What do you think about that? Not what I said, what the... Yeah.
When I first read the book, I come across these sentences, and they put, I was whole.
Is that a lawnmower? Is that a lawnmower for our recording? I'll just apologize on behalf of the group for what's going to happen to this recording. Please continue. And speak loudly, too.
It's sometimes when I, think about read these things on survival, it's like, oh gosh, it's kind of scary, intimidating. But then you read something like this, and it tells us how exactly that the love of the Father, and that, even from the highest to the lowest. Gives me a sense of security, I guess.
And I'm really glad to hear that, because I sometimes this on the lower side of this is the bumper sticker that says God loves you. Now we all believe that, and then when we look at it, God loves us. But you got somebody that can't quite make that decision or is unsure. I would think this would be your first reference, and not trying to tell somebody what this paragraph says, but to either read it to them or have them read it for themselves if you can. Please.
A lot of new readers, I find are quite intimidated or perplexed about the concept of sleeping survivors and what connotates ascension immediately or becoming a sleeping survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And in reference to finding certain answers to this in the book, of course one would say once you reach the third psychic circle, you are automatically ascending into the mansion world, but then yet again, the seventh circler that has enough faith is automatically ascending to the mansion worlds as well. What would you say about that?
Well, I would say that if your faith has approached wherever the line is, wherever the attainment is, if you're there, then that opens up new possibilities for you, just in the same way that earlier quote about the new development in the soul consciousness, where you actually start to be able to have the ability to hear more of what's going on with the adjuster. That, as an aside to trying to answer your question, that hearing what the adjuster says comes with it the imperative that you have become a very stable, non-flighty individual, and just because you get to see some potentially what would be for most people earth-shaking insight, understanding, perception, whatever it is. The fact is, you're not going to fall off the track. You're going to keep moving, and you're going to take it in stride, and you may have to sit down for a few minutes, but that's probably all that's going to happen.
And then again, one day in paradise is equivalent to 1,000 years. And for a sleeping sun, to sleep for 1,000 years, from a paradise point of view, it's not very long at all. But that from our human point of view, it seems like a long time to be woken.
But when we wake when we go to sleep at night and we wake up whenever we wake up, we rarely... Now, I do sometimes. Sometimes I'll wake up in the middle of the night and not see a clock, and I'll go, it's 4:15, and I'll look at the clock, and it's pretty close to 4:15. I don't know how that happens. I have no excuse. But other than that, you're asleep. When you're going to wake up, it's going to be a brand new day. And that's the part I want to... But it's going to be a brand new day when you wake up. Anybody? John?
I think the sleeping survivor thing does come up in study groups
such a movie. I always like that, but that comparison about sleep. I mean, if you sleep, the sound of sleep. Whether it's 20 hours, 8 hours, 300 hours, 1,000 years, when you wake up, there is no, you cannot consciously process that. I mean, so it's, you're just waking up like when before you were unconscious before and now conscious again. So it has no penalty, no, you know. The only thing maybe you'll recognize is if you meet one of your friends who woke up immediately, he's now got a lot more experience of 1,000 years of sleep.
In the first words out of that sleeping survivor's mouth is, I guess I should have listened to you back there. So you did know what you were talking about, and I wouldn't listen to you.
You wouldn't know the difference because the strain is just the strain.
Yeah. Well, yes.
So, brain teasers. I don't know if that really answers the questions when they're in that beginning stage of comprehending a lot of this stuff.
That was what you were looking for?
It's one of the reassuring things.
Yeah.
It's your progress is based upon your own effort, and therefore those who have progressed, they're ready to go and get working, and then they have themselves out. The flip side of that is, They have use for you as a first time to be conscious again and to be progressive. Whereas the others, well, we gotta wait till we get a class together, we gotta get instructors come down, because as a group they're gonna be resurrected and then, you know, we'll go to school and I'll get there, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a plan for everything. That's the thing that's so beautiful. No matter what you've done in the mortal life, a lot, nothing, something,
that's right.
For whatever reason.
That's right.
It's a fair program.
The fair program. That's right.
And the record will show that you agreed that it was a fair program. All right, how about this? Yes, I was first in my class in remedial God consciousness. Anybody else comments on this one?
Just the time factor. You know, we worry about. We think about time. We're putting it in the relationship of time as we know it, and our perception of time, and that would be something totally different.
Yeah. And also, it's a cultural thing, especially in America. I mean, being first, you know, in a minute. I mean, we're so conscious of the competition. Other cultures that I've experienced, it's not an issue. So, I mean, we're also inculcated.
I didn't follow the part about competition, if you could restate it.
Well, when they say, well, I'm penalized. I'm going to sleep for 1,000 years.
Oh, okay.
They see it as a penalty.
Yeah.
Because we're inculcated with, you got to be first, get to the heavy class, like, you know, I mean, it's just part of it. I'm not saying that's bad.
You got to be really fast at what you do.
And it's something that...
Remember, everything by numbers and money. every weekend, well, how much money does that movie make? They're judging the movie just by what it grossed. And, you know, it's just part of our DNA and our culture. But, you know, in some European countries, I mean, France, where they're having a huge uproar right now because all of a sudden they don't work on Sundays. The stores are not open on Sundays. I don't think we all knew that.
I don't. Even restaurants or?
Nothing is open.
Oh.
Because it's family day. That's the way their culture is. Now, because of part of the EU, there's pressure to open up.
This and that, and that's how it starts,
yeah. Because you're getting that struggle between the traditionalists and those who are.
When I was a kid growing up in Los Angeles, there I have a vague memory of this, but not a lot of things were open on Sunday, and certain car dealerships wouldn't sell on Sunday, but then there were ones that did. I don't think it happens as much anymore, certainly not where I live now, but my point is simply this, that for a good number of years, probably all the way through maybe to 1970 or more, more and more businesses were open on Sunday. Now, since I don't live there anymore and I only go back periodically, I've noticed that on Sunday it started to shift back towards fewer businesses being open on Sunday, aside from restaurants and things that, you know, because that culture there, you go out to eat on Sunday night. That's just something a lot of people do, Sunday morning or Sunday night, so it's open. But anyway, anybody else on that? Okay. So when you started to say about time, I looked at the clock thinking, oh, he's just keeping us honest there, but not this time.
Not this time.
But John, I think you make a really important point about the competitive nature, and I want to tie it back to something that...
Coming to the ranch book, you bring your cultural biases.
Okay.
Because you're not even conscious of it, really, because it's part of it. So you can look at some of these and say, all right, now if I get rid of some of my assumptions, you know, how can I look at this differently? Well,
yes.
You know, I'm struck by, wow, so I don't want to be part of this a thousand years. I want to be a third circular. You know, that is the kind of way of looking at it. So what I have to do to get to the third circle, well, they can be playing here. But it's unconscious. You can't measure it for yourself.
But what that kind of mind is saying is, how can I skip all that stuff and get to the part I want? Because there are no shortcuts, and how a person could ever read this book and believe that shortcuts could ever be real under any circumstances is beyond me. It's willful disregard is what it boils down to. But you do remind me of something that is mentioned in the book and doesn't find discussion very often, at least in what I've been involved in, and that is the reference to how in modern-day Christianity, the seeking for salvation is a largely personal endeavor. You better go get your salvation because the devil's out there to take it away from you and nobody's going to help you. It's each man for himself. And we call this Christianity?
But it doesn't have the devil chasing you. I mean,
yeah. There is a difference. Nothing can be. If we had been paying attention previously, we would. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Asking, what does this book have? What's this book going to tell me about Christianity? Of course, it's a Christian book.
Yeah.
That I either don't already know or it's new. And I had, for many years, I couldn't figure out what it was because I thought it was a huge history book.
Yes.
But
well, if I ask you that question, what would you say?
I came to the realization that's the big difference. The whole book is about the personal developing a personal relationship with God. I mean,
yeah.
To me, like, period. All the other words are embellishing that and encouraging me to say, I don't have to go to church. I don't, you know, I don't have to go to.
I think you're closer to God.
Right. How do I, you know, from at an early age, hopefully, start developing a personal relationship with God, or in this weekend seminar for God consciousness. Mm-hmm.
What is the quote, if anybody can draw it up, and this is sort of a loaded question in the sense that there could be so many of them in the book, but there is a quote that I'm thinking of that goes right to that point.
Ken knows.
You need words. Ken's got the concordance, and I've got an index, so let's see what we can find.
You know, I'm trying to think of what it says.
Part of the armor of God.
I lost it. Yeah. If it comes back up.
It's challenging to find the last thing.
I'll just have to be satisfied with feeling challenged. Then we'll.
The mind is. There's a little synapse. It's the stone.
Yes, but if you're at the cellular level, it probably looks like a nuclear explosion.
Right.
What's your first name?
Darla.
Oh yeah, Darla. Darla's question and what we were talking about, the sleeping survivors. This may help, but it certainly gives a perspective to it. If we just live 1 year on each of the worlds we're going to live on, we literally are going to be millions upon millions of years old and still will not have reached God. And so that puts 1,000 years in a much different perspective.
Sure.
You were talking, she had the question about sleeping survivors, and I don't have an answer as to how you know whether you're going to be one or whether you are there. Yeah. There really is no answer to that. And many people do.
As far far as you know, you'll wake up at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
But I think it's great the fact that somehow, like, your whole, all of your loved ones, maybe if we're most of us are not very circular, you know, you're going to visit with all of your loved ones. It's not like they're going to be over there waiting for you, and they've had all this stuff, and they're going to, you know, you're going to actually resurrect together. And so it's going to be like, you know, like a great family reunion kind of thing. I mean, mm-hmm. once we kind of like get over it, get over the shock of it, I mean, I think it's going to be, they were going to be kind of like babies, you know, in the beginning for a few, what is this going on here? You know, and it's been like, oh my, you know, and to the extent that we have been prepared for that experience more than most people are, where's Jesus? Where's Jesus?
John.
But on the flip side, see that the one that Paul says, when we resurrect, we have the opportunity to look up
friends. You get 10 days of R&R.
So look up, to me, tells me that we don't all resurrect together, because look up, maybe I have to go to the third mansion world and visit
somebody.
Well, my grandpa, otherwise thought was a brilliant man, but then I was a little boy that loved his grandpa, so I mean, you know what I'm saying, it didn't say look up as a
We have in our consciousness this awareness of time passing that I kind of referenced earlier, and there's a sense of sometimes of an urgency or of a, boy, I'm going to miss out on that, or I'm going to have to pick it up if I want to get there and do that, or whatever it is, and a lot of that is going to fall away when we get as we assimilate into that next life and we begin to accept that larger plan, and that there's going to be a lot to do today, there's going to be a lot to do tomorrow, and yet we will still have even higher and more specific aspirations.
You know, I'm glad you brought that time thing up, because when you mentioned it before, I had another little thought about it, and they say the older you get, time seems to go, how many years go by so fast? Well, there's a simple logical explanation for that. When you're young, a year compared to the experience of your existence is a big, long time.
Mm-hmm.
One, let's say you're 6 years old, it's 1/6 of the time you've lived, right?
Yeah.
The older you get, that year gets less and less and less, and as well as that goes on and on, it's kind of like that infinite thing, and it just becomes the eternal now.
Yes.
So that's a really important thing, and I remember consciously to this day being 6 or 7 years old and having my mom say, you know, well, who's this that's coming to visit us, Mom? Well, I haven't seen him in 15 years, and I thought, what the hell is 15 years? I stopped for I don't care who this person is. What's 15 years? I don't get that. I'm sorry. Who was going
to,
Michael?
Well, I think we have to keep in perspective that what we're meeting here with. You know, what is going to follow us?
Yeah. What's going to survive?
You know,
what's
going to be relevant spiritual
relationships?
Yeah, basically relationships. And that word on this paper, relationships, is really pretty. how can you make it? How do we make a connection to God? Our connection to God is basically through our relationships. How do we do the Father's will? It's basically all based in relationships.
Yeah.
I mean, and our physical.
Wait, say that again, would you please? It's based in.
Our
relationships.
Yeah, interrelationships.
He found the truth of the universe and he forgot it a second later. Relationships. That's so important.
Well, and even the things that we would think, the material aspects of our lives, things that we do that we might think would be against the Father's will, are really directly tied to those relationships. What is best for others? And, you know, the plants, the trees, the buildings, I mean, it's stuff that we would think that we would try to tie that together to it really has only meaning if it has something to do with another individual or another personality, another relationship.
Building or doing
it. I'm sorry, did you have your hand up?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, rather than relationships, for me, it comes back to the decisions, because I think that's how Eve may have gotten into trouble, is when you start thinking out about relationships, things can get muddled. And she can think, well, what's the best thing for all those people? Maybe I should speed things up and help them along by taking this other course. But that's the whole thing.
I believe the line is repeatedly warned.
But it's not relationship.
And then Jesus says, warnings don't make that.
She just had to do her will. It was a decision thing. Mm-hmm. It's decisions that are so important, are choosing. And that choosing, it's how it's in relation to doing God's will.
You know, even though she lived for 50,000, 100,000, 200,000 years before she came here, she didn't have the thought of justice. She didn't have that access to that direct line to God. You know, she had Adam, and they had, if they'd been together, they would almost could have compensated. She had the angels, she had every, all this other stuff. But you see how important that thought of justice.
Well, and then you also have to ask yourself, in all humility, look at some of the choices I've made. I'm just saying. I'm going to read something. We've got about 20 minutes as far as this goes, but as I said, we can go as far as you guys want to go. I'm just going to read something because it's so obvious, but it needs to be said, and then we'll move on to something that came up earlier, but that I expected to get to at some point, and lo, here it is. You become conscious of man as your creature brother because you are already conscious of God as your creator father. Fatherhood is the relationship out of which we reason ourselves into the recognition of brotherhood. And fatherhood becomes or may become a universe reality to all moral creatures because the Father has himself bestowed personality upon all such beings and has encircled them within the grasp of the universal personality circuit. We worship God first because he is, then because he is in us, and last because we are in him. And when Jesus says, you know, I am in the Father and the Father is in me, the first time you probably read that in the Bible, you know, what does that mean? It took me a while to get that, but I did meditate on it then, and it made perfect reciprocal sense. So, that's 196.06. But we're going to move along to the next one, and I'm going to change up the order. 445.05. Chris, would you do that one, please?
Sure. Spirit identification constitutes the secret of personal survival and determines the destiny of spirit.
Just a simple little sentence, isn't it? What do you take from it? 445, paragraph 5,
okay.
On the handout. We're going straight from the handout. I'm sorry, Chris, go ahead if you want to comment on that.
I guess it's a little questioning about what they mean by spirit identification. They don't mean the spirit of truth, I assume. And guessing that it sounds in a way like they're using that as a sort of broader term in terms of God and the spiritual identification versus some other kind of physical.
There's an implication in there, I think, but I want to hear the rest of what you think there, and I'll throw this definition or this idea out. Spirit identification, I would read to mean our personal spirit identification, how we identify with spirit and what spirit, in other words, God primarily, but what and how, and to the degree that we identify with God, then the rest of it. But it's our identification in the spirit.
I think you could substitute soul there as well. I mean, you could say soul identification.
Well, the soul identifying with spirit.
With spirit.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to the material form of the mind.
In the context of the full paragraph on page 445, it is specifically speaking about thought of justice as the spirit of fusion and ascension.
So identifying with the thought of justice.
Yeah, so I guess, and it, So it just seems to me to stand in contrast to identification with the spirit, with the physical. Basically, that you know the spirit is what's lasting, and that is what is going to have meaning for the person in terms of their survival, their ultimate survival. It's interesting because I was talking to someone last night about when they talk about being a good person, you know, and I got, it took me a while to figure that out, or I guess to look back, look in and see where they discuss that in the book. But where it says that, you know, you could be a completely good person here on Earth, but that's not enough, you know. And which to me, it took me a while to figure that out, because I really always kind of did think, well, for some time, I thought, if you're completely good person and you're totally, you know, everyone's welfare above your own, how could that not be, you know, how could that not be lasting? How could that not then put you on the way? But then, if you don't have, in the book, it says, if you don't have the concept of God and faith, you don't have the perspective, you don't have the focus on what is lasting and what is going to continue. Because then, if you're just good, then you really are only looking at the material plane in a way, and it also doesn't give you the perspective to try and do. Well, the perspective that other people are going to be continuing on. So what you're doing here is not only important for what's here, but what is going to be important for people as beings as they continue on.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very helpful in terms of what.
And I would encourage you to continue the work on that, because that's one of those things that I think it's more of a movement through the understanding of all the things that are in that lineage that of which that thought is a segment of, and you get into, you know, but why does God, how does God judge us? By our intent. Why does He value us? Because we are, not because of who we are or what we do. But the Supreme Being then takes on that, yeah, what have you done for me lately? So there's so many ways to look at that, but the answer always lies in the continued movement. If we stop somewhere, it's probably, and I mean that in a conscious choosing way, if we just stop living, then we stopped. But if you're out there serving people, and there's something intent coming from you, the stimulus for morality, it says, is like a purely human development or evolution, but the stimulus to be that comes from the spirit within.
Yeah, that's the other part of the sort of the whole circle.
It is a circle, but it's not a vicious circle.
What is it that's making you be good and want to be good?
And there's a quote here later at the end, and I hope if we don't get to it in the normal flow, we'll stay one extra minute and read it anyway, because it kind of does that. Was there another comment that wanted to be made?
Well, just what he said, there is another statement in the book. It says something to the effect that the kingdom of good is not what is important. It's the kingdom of God, and they make a distinction between the two. Kind of like they're saying, it's just not enough to accept the kingdom of good. Maybe just be a humanist. We do have to have that faith, a belief in God.
You know, you made me think of something interesting too, that when you are putting your emphasis on God, that there's a growth aspect to that too. If you're only doing it on the level of here, in this material plane, then that's where it stays. But if you're trying to be good and to do good and to follow the will of God, you're continually trying to understand what it is that you need to do and what that will is, so there's a continual progression, which also speaks a lot to survival.
Yeah. In a not directly related thing, there's one part where they say, you know, Jesus, all these other religions were this, this, or this, but Jesus taught a religion of self-forgetfulness in loving social service. So, you know, you're not so much worried about, yeah, well, what's happening to me is going out and doing the right thing. And in the end, do the right thing is a pretty powerful thing when taken in a spiritual context. We're going to do two paragraphs here, and again, I apologize for my computer because I corrected this three times, and you know those boxes that pop up that say, do you want to save the changes you made? There wasn't a box that said, we don't care. I checked the box that said yes, and it's right in my computer, but I printed it, and finally I said, forget it, I've got to print these things, because here we go. Okay, Darla, would you please read it, 1140.07 there, and 1142.03, the top of the next page, please.
Religious experience is the spiritual content of religion. Notwithstanding the mythological vagaries. And the psychological illusions of the intellectual content of religion, the metaphysical assumptions of error and the techniques of self-deception, the political distortions and the socio-economic perversions of the philosophic content of religion, the spiritual experience of personal religion remains genuine and valid.
Somebody hand me a tennis racket.
There is a reality in religious experience that is proportional to the spiritual content, and such a reality is transcendent to reason, science, philosophy, wisdom, and all other human achievements.
What do you think? Yeah, my first one on that one is wow, and I've read this hundreds of times.
Just a technical comment. In the book itself, which doesn't carry over when you highlight and copy, the word is in italics, so it's an
which is
religious experience is the spiritual content of religion.
You know something? I remember having a discussion with James about that fact, and what I realized is that I copied this out of a previously copied document and didn't go word for word to review it. But after he said that, I took a look at it, and when you download directly off of the Read the Book part of the Foundation's website, the italics come. But if you go off the CD-ROM, I think it doesn't. Yeah. Yeah. There's an evolutionary process there. Okay, so Darla, did you have anything you wanted to say about this one? Because this one's loaded. I mean, this is just loaded.
It's pretty much saying all of the hullabaloo. To simplify a religion does not in any way detract from the reality of true spirituality.
Right. Yeah. And I'm going to take off on this a little bit. Religious experience is the spiritual content of religion. Jump over to the next page. And there is a reality in religious experience that is proportional to the spiritual content. So if the spiritual content is, how does it say that? Religious experience is the spiritual content of religion, then the reality of all that is determined by the spiritual content. Okay? And that it is transcendent to all other human achievements. It transcends, and that's, and there is somewhere else, and I don't know if I'm going to get if we're going to get to it, but I'll just say it. It is the adjuster that adds the sense of reality to those religious experiences. You know that. The adjuster enhances, or maybe we could say highlights. You're moving along through life and you have one of these experiences that is something you ought to take note of, and it flashes in your head, or something happens and you go, yeah, even if you don't consciously know. But I think through the process that we're all involved in, we eventually get to start to consciously know, or we grab ourselves and go back and say, now wait a minute, I wasn't in my right mind when I read that, I got to do that again, or let me re-understand that. I think those two paragraphs are so significant. And there's another one that talks about primitive religious experience, and I don't know where, if I have that, but let's go ahead, we've got just a few minutes here. Any further comments on those two? I'm going to read this one because it's replete. The adjusters are the actuality of the Father's love incarnate in the souls of men. The actuality of the Father's love. Ken, you'd be next.
Sure.
What I've got there in 12:21:03-5 are excerpts from those couple of paragraphs, and if you would take that one, please.
12:21. The imitation of God is key to perfection. The doing of His will is the secret of survival and of perfection in survival. Mortals live in God, and so God has willed to live in mortals. As men trust themselves to Him, so does He, and first, trusted a part of Himself to be with men, has consented to live in men and to indwell men subject to the human will. Peace in this life, survival in death, perfection in the next life, service in eternity, all these are achieved in spirit now when the creature personality consents, chooses to subject the creature will to the Father's will. And already has the Father chosen to make a fragment of Himself subject to the will of the creature personality. Even the Bible said that in a not so distinct way, that we love God because God first loved us. Sent His Son to live in the because God first loved us, this is exactly what it's stating here. God first loved us, loves us, so God made a plan to do all this.
In everything He asked us to do, He has already done completely free will subject to our will. The model, the plan, the will, it's, if you can actualize these concepts in these couple of sentences.
I fell on another part of the quote of the saying.
Okay.
This one, when man consecrates his will to do the doing of the Father's will, when man gives God all he has, then does God make that man more than he is.
Mm-hmm.
That's really powerful. But also, you know, the syntax of the book is talking about man all the time, you know, when man does this. You can take those sentences and say, when we consecrate the will to it, or when I consecrate the will to the Father, we consecrate, you know, and it kind of takes that lofty kind of looking down on you and say that these beings actually had or are. And it kind of personalizes it even more. So,
yes, and
when I,
and you know, sometimes in public speaking, people, instead of saying he, will say she, to use the collect as a collective.
I like we.
Yeah. And I think when I talk and I write, I probably say that more because I don't know, you know, how else to say it, because it's not a me you thing, it's an us thing.
The distinction that I would make, though, is that the book often uses, you know, it says when man does such and such, and we can substitute I for in there, when I do such and such.
But when it says,
when it says when primitive man does such and such, I never substitute I.
But on the highly evolved, supremely God-conscious ones, I'm right in there. Yeah, that's, see that up there? That's me up there.
I want to ask this nice one other little question. One thing that stood out in Charles' speech was when he said, when there is no way, God makes a way. And I'm trying to say, is that a quote from the book, or is that his own interpretation? I've never been able to find that quote in the book.
I don't know if that's exactly it, but it's something more like, you know, it's that thing about with God, all things that are within His will are possible.
Yeah.
He's not going to do something. There is one line that the first time I read it, I thought, oh, that can't be. Even God, for God, even some things are impossible. And they're not impossible because He couldn't do them, but because He wouldn't do them, which comes back to that choice.
Right.
Okay.
But then he said, as an aside, he said, there is no way, God will make a way. And then he says, I don't understand it, but I believe it wholly. Or something. I know it's true. So I can't understand that, but I know it's true.
Well, and going back to the just for a short digression, going back to the earlier discussion of time and sleeping survivors and stuff, those couple of thoughts there, I think, add to that dialogue, because the person who's worried about being a sleeping survivor is freezing in a moment of, I'm not going to get there, or there's something wrong with me, or it's some tape that doesn't need to play anymore. And when you superimpose the new thought on that, when that person longs for and reaches out for something of spiritual value from God, then what does it say in the Tao? In the pursuit of Tao, every day you lose the things that no longer matter. It doesn't say it that way, but that's what it means. You get rid of stuff. And it's because it's useless, not because you need it. If you need it, you shouldn't throw it away anyway.
If it's not real.
Yeah. But if it's not real, or if it's only got a short life, then let it have its short life and don't hold on to it. Okay, well, there's so much more to do, and yet at the same time, I think let's take it to the last one, 2097, 2 and 3.
Very last one.
Yes. Cool. And then I'll do the closing prayer.
Before you do,
yes.
If I may, I was very, very privileged in talking with Charles. Charles gave me a copy of his plenary. And he has page 46 noted for that paraphrase, because he said that the last portion was entirely paraphrased.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead, please.
The actual quote up on page 46, this is paper number 3, section 2, the first, excuse me, the second paragraph. Page 46, the last paragraph of the page. Within the bounds of that which is consistent with the divine nature, it is literally true that with God all things are possible.
Okay, that's
so good. That's the quote, and Charles' personal interpretation that he chose to share with us is to say, you can make a way even when it appears to us to not be no way. To be no way.
It just spoke to me because I'm facing a big challenge.
And that is certainly true. And the thing is to stay on the horse, to keep the fact that it's got your attention and that it's very real and very important is the cause to be at your best. And I think sometimes certain individuals, and we've certainly all been there ourselves, we get weak in some of those moments when we need to reach out to God and we need to bring all we have. Who is going to do the last? Okay.
The great challenge to modern man is to achieve better communication with the divine monitor that dwells within the human mind. Man's greatest adventure in the flesh consists in the well-balanced and sane effort to advance the borders of self-consciousness out through the dim realms of embryonic soul consciousness in a wholehearted effort to reach the borderland of spirit consciousness, contact with the divine presence. Such an experience constitutes God consciousness, an experience mightily confirmative of the knowledge of the actuality of sonship with God. Otherwise, the assurance of sonship is the experience of faith. And God consciousness is equivalent to the integration of the self with the universe and on its highest levels of spirit reality. Only the spirit content of any value is imperishable. Even that which is true, beautiful, and good may not perish. Even that which is true, beautiful, and good may not perish in human experience. If man does not choose to survive, then does the surviving adjuster conserve those realities born of love and nurture and service? And all these things are a part of the universal Father. The Father is living love, and this life of the Father is in his sons, and the spirit of the Father is in his son's son, mortal man. When all is said and done, the Father idea is still the highest human concept of God.
You remember the first time you read that?
I know I've read it a lot of times. I don't know.
It's very moving, obviously.
Yeah.
I only got the last sentence, I think, the first time I read it.
Right, that's all you remember.
And as I've come back to this and I've looked at such an experience, reaching out beyond yourself to contact with the divine presence, constitutes God consciousness. And in that, it confirms the actuality of sonship with God. Otherwise, you exist with the assurance through the experience of faith. So your assurance is one of faith until it becomes one of actualized truth. And that is not dependent on God in the least. It is dependent 100% on your acceptance, your permission, your agreement, your allowance, that you say yes in its total and complete 100% unreserved, wholehearted yes, God, I know this now to be true. It is true. I will begin today, and I will continue to live not hoping that it might be true, but in the knowledge and assurance that it is true. And I will base what I do on that affirmament, or whatever you want to call that. We're not quite done. Did you have a comment? Okay. Go to the list, the page. This is by no means replete. If anyone has something they'd like to add, because these are a little, some of them are just a direct theft from the book, and some of them are a paraphrase in what I think. But does anybody have anything they'd like us to add to this list? I would then draw your attention to the first and the last, and that is, and this is a realization I had the other day. I mean, it's obvious, but for me it was new. God the Father is the origin, history, and destiny of the individual. And the origin, history, and destiny is what determines our current status. And we need to consider those things in reconciling who, what, where we are now, and allowing our aspirations of who, where, and what we want to be with respect and in response to the love of God, to do the will of God. Everybody okay with that?
Yeah, it's a great concept.
Okay. I would ask you all to center yourself for a moment, take a couple deep breaths, and close your eyes if you would indulge me. Rejoice and be glad, for our journey here begins. We hail from Urantia, birthplace of eternal and immortal spirits of paradise ascension. We are Agandantars. While we are trying to be true, the Father reckons us as passing our trials and living the truth of His will. As we share our love with our fellows, so is the Father sharing His love for us and through us. As we forgive, so are we forgiven for whatever needs forgiving. Father, let us not turn aside, but ever walk in the clear light of the eternal progression. Father, let the wellspring of everlasting life inundate our souls to overflowing, and the infectious spirit of your love pass through us to all people. Reveal yourself, Father, that we may feel you and know you, and let us become more and more like you, that all people may know you through the living revelation of our lives. Thank you so much.
Beautiful.